But it's not frequently that we have guests on the Knollcast. But when we have the opportunity to talk to somebody of significance, we'll arrange time. Certainly, very, very fortunate tonight to be joined by Rachel Barbeau. You can hear Rachel on XM's College Sports Nation. Find her writings at gridironnow.com. And as of 2015, she has been a Heisman Trophy voter. Rachel, again, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. And yeah, thank you for giving me the platform to be able to share a little bit about what you and the rest of the world will inevitably see on Showtime. Should I make the director's cut? You know, FSU is doing something much like Notre Dame did, but really having the all access with the cameras and, you know, allowing them in all really parts of their life. I mean, it's amazing where they're letting those cameras go and sidelines, games, training rooms, you know, meetings about health and wellness, team meeting rooms, coaches meetings. They're all over the place. And so I was fortunate enough to be invited by Jimbo Fisher last Sunday night, and I became the first female sportscaster to address the football team and was able to go in and talk about a variety of topics, and my story, my hope for them, and what I'm seeing in college football right now that I think we so desperately have to change because the headlines right now, guys, gentlemen, are by and large negative across the country. And that's not indicative of the leaders on football teams that I know of, right? Of the good guys that are doing it right every single day, because we know if it bleeds, it leads. So we know that. And I don't want the leaders to be bypassed anymore. I don't want the leaders anymore to be hijacked by the guys that aren't doing it right, that are making victims out of people. You know, we're hearing all too often about domestic violence and sexual violence on campuses. That's just part of it. But I want the players and also the coaches, but by and large, the players to change the narrative. I created the hashtag I'm changing the narrative and the hashtag changing the narrative. The FSU football program tweeted out from their official account, hashtag changing the narrative. I've got bracelets that are going down there to them that say hashtag I'm changing the narrative. And so I'm just incredibly grateful that Jimbo Fisher would step out on a limb, really, and have me in.
Rachel, so, you know, he's brought in a lot of speakers, and certainly Coach Fisher should be commended for wanting to take. And, you know, these guys are tired after practice, and yet he's like, look, let's build them up. Let's give them a greater message about life and about being a good person and about, you know, how to use their position of influence. I know that was part of your main message to them.
Yeah, absolutely. My message was like tenfold, sevenfold. Where this came out of, just to give you a genesis and your listeners the background, is when the headlines this summer, particularly Baylor and Mississippi State with Jeffrey Simmons and Boise State all over the country, when the headlines just became too much for me, I ended up creating a very simple 10-point curriculum in which right now I'm turning that into an ebook. And it's just simple stuff, but it's stuff that maybe some of these guys missed if they didn't come from a two-parent home, or they came from a socioeconomic background that that wasn't the best, or a neighborhood that wasn't the best, or maybe they saw abuse in one form or fashion growing up. And then you add into that the entitlement that a gifted athlete receives and the pumping up, right, that he gets his entire life. And that can be recipe for disaster, all those things combined, or just one of those things. And so I created this curriculum. I started working, took it to my dear friend Kevin Elko, which he is a stalwart there at Florida State, really one of Jimbo's right-hand men when it comes to performance consultant and a sports psychologist. I think he has 20 national championships underneath his belt, guys, of teams that he's worked with. And I just currently wrote a book with Chuck Pagano called The Sender about his cancer battle. And so I created this curriculum and I said, I want to take this into high schools and junior highs across the country. And he said, I think that's great, but I'd also love for you to speak at colleges. And just after that, an invitation came from Jimbo Fisher from the FSU football program. And there I went.
So was Florida State the first college to invite you in?
Yes. Yes. And you know, that was very interesting to get back to your question about the message. you know, interestingly enough, that's one of the things I told them. I mean, you can hear it in my voice. I'm a very passionate person. I don't do anything halfway, anything in my life. And one of the things I told them is I said, you know, you guys are a top three, top two, top five program, depending on what outlet you're looking at. But not only do you have the opportunity this season to lead on the football field, right? To lead the ACC, to lead on the football field, to march towards the college football playoff, because that's what it's all about now. But you have the opportunity to be the first. I'm at your school, and to me, it's no coincidence. I'm at one of the best, one of the perennial and historical top programs in the country. I'm at your school, and you have the opportunity to not only lead the charge on the football field, but you have the opportunity to change the narrative in college football. Take back those headlines. Make those headlines full of leaders and positive things and good deeds and accolades and guys doing it the right way, guys looking out for each other. Like Kevin Elko talks about, the power of one. You know, you don't have to go out and affect 12 people. You can go out and affect one person, and that one person goes and hopefully affects another person and so on and so forth, and you become a ripple in the pond. So that was one of the things that I left them with, you know, to really get them fired up. And you mentioned, Bud, you talked about at the end of practice how tired they are. The second day I was there, they were supposed to be done with practice at 11:30 in the morning, and we got there a little bit late just to see the end of practice. And I just found out that they had restarted the entire practice. Jimbo wasn't happy with what he was seeing, and so they restarted the entire practice. But that night before, they were tired too. And it was a very challenging group of people to talk to. And I've spoken to thousands and all different subsets of groups, but 18 to 23 year olds, and then the college, you know, the coaches as well. That's a challenging group to speak to. But I remember seeing these guys, and they were leaning forward with their elbows on their knees, their hands underneath their chin, eyes wide open. And you know, you could have cut the emotion in the room with a knife. And for me, looking back, knowing that I had their attention like that was everything.
Now, Rachel, did you give the specific examples of situations where you feel like, hey, you know, you can use your position of power and influence to make those around you better and hold each other accountable?
Absolutely. I sure did. You know, I talked about the fact that I have accomplished a lot in my career, but that none of it, and I've been a first in a lot. I never set out to be the first, but the first female on Sirius XM College Sports Nation. I hosted the first ever college football playoff in Dallas and did so again last year and will again this year. And then actually went through a professional football training camp, and I'm, that I know of, the only known female sportscaster to ever fully participate in a men's professional football training camp. And I told them, I said, of all those firsts, right? The thing that matters the most to me was I was able to organize a climb up Kilimanjaro for my friend Kevin Turner, who had ALS. He was a fullback for Alabama and then the Patriots and the Eagles. And he led his NFL brothers actually in a charge against the NFL to get the $1 billion settlement to take care of former players. And Peter King called him the face of that movement, a very brave individual. But I organized a climb up Kilimanjaro. Seven of us climbed. And we ended up raising $90,000 for ALS research, and it got turned into a movie that was narrated by the Mike Ditka. And so if you had told, and what I told them and shared with them, is if you had told a 22-year-old Rachel, that one day she would do that and that it would become the most important thing that she's ever done with your life, Rachel, if somebody was talking to me at that age, I would have told you to get out of town. And so, you know, I showed a clip from the movie, the trailer, and they were all in 100%. And I told them, I said, you know, listen, you got to be looking for that opportunity. You got to be looking for that moment, because this platform you've been given, let me give you a clue. It's not about you. Okay. It's not about your purpose in life. Let me give you another clue. It's not you. It's others. And so that was one of the main points. And I did touch on, while it is not my entire story, and I don't choose to be, and I hope I'm not profiled that way, but I did talk about the fact that I was also a victim at one point in my life of a man putting his hands on me. And I asked them to imagine if that was their grandmother, their aunt, their sister, their girlfriend, and how would they feel?
What was their reaction? Obviously, you said they were, you know, obviously very engaged. What was the feedback that you got from the players and the staff and the coaches as a whole?
Well, it was incredibly positive, and I want to share that. But I will tell you that when we were talking about the abuse, it was very uncomfortable, and I don't know how it can't be uncomfortable, right? And I addressed that, guys. I said that I know this is uncomfortable. You know, they go from being on the edge of their seat and looking at me to kind of shrinking down in their seat. It is uncomfortable, and I said it's uncomfortable for me to talk about it too. But let me tell you something. I don't want you to feel sorry for me because I am not a victim. I am a victor. I have used my pain and what happened to me as a way to be able to help others. And so I think once we turned that corner together and I didn't have their pity, I knew I already had their respect. But once I kind of dispelled and distinguished the opportunity to have their pity, I think, you know, there was a mutual level of respect that was pretty amazing. But to answer your question, but afterwards, you know, I hung around up front and I had a four or five players come up and just hug me and thank me and say, you know, thank you so much. You inspired me and you inspired me to want to use my platform to do good. And hey, I told him I was taking some things to the Baton Rouge victims, flood victims. And one of the gentlemen players walked up to me and said, if I bring some stuff to Mark Robinson's office tomorrow, can you get that to Baton Rouge? And so that to me was music to my ears because I made them go out and take action steps and not just let that inspiration die in that room. I went to practice the next day too. And there was another player that was sitting out. He had an injury and we started talking and he said, Rachel, you know, I went home and I talked to my roommate about what you talked about. And I said, well, what do you think's your way? What's your platform? And he said, you know, I don't know yet, but what I do know is I got a real good attitude, Rachel. People tell me I'm really awesome to be around and I lift the team up and then I always have a smile on my face. And he said, I feel like that's my gift right now. And I said, you know what, son? I didn't call him son, but I said, you know what, bud? That is your gift. And you just run with that right now and you keep staying in that gift and in that mode and your purpose will present itself.
And it also sounds like on the next day of practice, just from talking earlier, I know you shared with me that a couple players took and stood up and actually applied some of the leadership techniques and being a purpose bigger than yourself and applied it to complimenting and also calling out others after practice.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I was fortunate enough to stay around the next day to hear the great Kevin Elko speak. And if you don't know who he is, your listeners, go and get the book, The Sender. It is amazing. He and a gentleman named Bill Busey wrote that. And it's, again, loosely based on the cancer battle of Chuck Pagano and the letters that Kevin Elko wrote to him during that cancer battle. And he is somebody that that Jimbo has in a lot to speak to this team, okay? And so he was speaking to them the next day. And I'd like to believe that some of the things that I talked about were the catalyst for this. But Dalvin Cook, I was incredibly blown away at his leadership skills. I'm talking about it was oozing out of his pores. Kevin looked at him. I was sitting next to Jimbo, and Kevin looked at him and called on him. And he literally jumped over the second row to get up there. And he looked at that team and he told them what he needed from them, what he expected from them, what he was going to give them, how he was going to lead them. And I just, again, was just blown away. He called other leaders up there, including Sean McGuire and other leaders from different groups, positional groups. And they would call out players that, hey, listen, you know, I believe in you, but you're not doing this. Or I believe in you. I see you working hard. And all over the room, it was like an infection of just all kinds of goodness. I can't quantify it and put my finger on it, but it spread like a virus through that room in the best possible way. And you had guys, their shoulders back all of a sudden, and where they had their chin down, they had their chin up, and the manhood was really showing in that room. And I was super inspired, and I can't see how that's not going to transpire to the football field this season.
Absolutely. And it sounds like Florida State was really pleased with your presentation and with your impact on the team, so much so that they're going to have you back for some small group meetings as well with smaller groups of players individually.
Yeah, that's what I'm told. I'm told that I'm going to be asked back. If not, I know I'll be down there for the Clemson game, if not before. And what, you know, the coolest thing I think that, you know, oftentimes, guys, it just takes one, right? It just takes one person to step out and do something bold. And I praised Jimbo Fisher in front of them because I said leaders beget other leaders. Leaders make leaders. They inspire other leaders. And I said, this guy took a chance on me, you know, and had me in here. He didn't have to have me in here. And he, you know, he had me in here. And, you know, I just thought that was, I thought that was pretty amazing that he would do that. And the fact that I, you know, I'm going to have the opportunity, hopefully, I'm told, to go back and be able to speak to them again, because you can only get so much across in 45 minutes. And what I'm told is, you know, that, and I know, is that these guys will, you know, open up to you when you're not in a, you know, a huge room full of so many people. And so I look forward to that opportunity to go back and be able to speak to them on a smaller basis.
Absolutely. I think that's a great message you're sharing, and I'm glad that, you know, you're willing to open up and share your message with those guys. And like you said, I think it's great that Jimbo does bring in, you know, take time out of training camp to bring in speakers when he has everybody there before classes have started, and, you know, say, hey, let's focus on things that are greater than football, because, you know, football for the vast majority of these guys is only going to be 4 years of their life.
Exactly.
You know, most of these guys are super talented, and yet they're not all pros. Most of them, yep, won't go to the NFL.
Yep.
That's really cool. What was your take on Showtime being there? I know you've been around a number of college programs. That has to be a real unique vibe with cameras just everywhere.
Yeah, and let me say one more thing about what you previously asked about. You know, one of the exact things I said to them is the game's going to be done with you at some point, and it's probably not going to be when you want it to, right? If you're not ready, if you haven't figured out what the next step is, your calling, your dreams, your passion, you know, and you might find yourself, and I've seen it over and over again in doing radio for over 10 years, you know, guys that didn't want the game to be done with them and weren't ready, but they're done with them nonetheless. And so, you know, I didn't mean for it to scare them. I just wanted it to be a dose of reality. And oftentimes what happens after the game is not pretty. We see a large percentage of drug addiction, divorces, and bankruptcy from guys that come out of the NFL. Even if you make it to the NFL, what is it, the 0.02% that actually make it to the NFL? So I talked to them about that, about, you know, just trying to lay the foundation for their dreams, their purpose, their plan later on in life, so they don't just get there and go, oh my gosh, what, you know, what have I been doing this whole time? What am I going to do next? So I just wanted to mention that. But per Showtime, yeah, it was very interesting, I will say. And when speaking to Jimbo after I talked, you know, I was thanking him in person for doing that. And I said, you know, your boldness has really made a mark. And there's other Power Five schools that are calling now, Group of Five schools, and wanted me to speak. And I said, that was very bold of you, and I appreciate that. He said, well, Rachel, he said, you know, that's part of the reason why we brought Showtime in here. You know, is we have nothing to hide. We want to show what we're doing. We want to show what we're doing to try to build up these young men. And he said, it's part of the reason why he brought him in here. And listen, other than having done it before at the other school they've been at, I mean, the coverage that they have is absolutely unprecedented. I was joking with Mark Robinson, their assistant athletic director there, for football relations, I believe. And I was joking, do they get to go to the bathroom with you? I mean, that's kind of the amount of coverage that they have access to.
Talking with Rachel Barbaro. Rachel can be heard on XM College Sports Nation, and her writings can be found at gridironnow.com. Rachel, not asking you to give any secrets away by any means, but you are one of the few people that have been able to watch what sounds like multiple Florida State practices now. Anything immediately stand out to you just from a macro level as far as the mindset of the team?
Yeah, you know, I think I talked to a number of the coaches when the practice got started over on Saturday, or excuse me, the second day I was there. I guess that was Monday. There wasn't the audible groans. There was an accountability, almost as if we know. And I heard it in the meeting a little bit later on. Hey, listen, you know, one player calling out another, and it wasn't a lot, you know, and so you had the accountability of one player calling out another. But what I did notice when that practice got started over was that they just got right to it, and it was hot. You know what I mean? I mean, it was very, very hot, as you can imagine. And they just got right back at it. There's a level of physicality there. And I'm used to watching Alabama practices. I covered them from 2009 to 2011. It's elite. I noticed that too. You just notice it when it's there. There's a tangible desire and a want to as well. And I don't know if it's the result of you know, the end of last year. I'm not sure. But there's a desire and a want to there that is tangible. And I, you know, the physicality of the running backs, I noticed that as well, following the lead of one, Dalvin Cook. And as I mentioned before, it's not just with his running back group. He commanded that entire practice room when he spoke to them and called them to go with him on this journey that is this season. It was remarkable.
That's really awesome to hear with a guy who, you know, by pretty much all logic is probably going to be going to the NFL following this upcoming junior year.
Yeah. I mean, I have not had, insider access to Florida State until now. So I don't know, what type of leader he was before inside those walls. So I can't, you guys might know better. Your listeners might know better, but all I can tell you is what I saw was not something ordinary. And I've been around a lot of football programs, all right? I've been on sidelines. I've covered football for the ACC Network. I've been on Sirius for 3 years and then been covering it for a variety of outlets for 10 more before that. And so that's not normal. That is not your run-of-the-mill leader there. And the way they responded to him is something I will not soon forget.
Rachel, let me ask you another question. You mentioned some of the things that took place this summer that were no means a high point for college football. Let me just ask your opinion about what you thought about the situation at Texas A&M and how you responded as a pretty well-educated female on athletics, how you responded to that seminar that they tried to do that went rather wrong.
I was disgusted. Are you kidding me? I wrote a piece on Gridiron Now about it, and I was actually doing a show with Rick Neuheisel on Monday on Sirius. And I didn't know how Coach was going to react because, it's a locker room talk. It's, it's ha, 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 boys will be boys. I've worked with men for 10 plus years. I get it. That kind of talk is it happens. I'm not stupid. But to speak that way in the presence of women, one, it was degrading. Two, it was embarrassing. And three, it took us back. You talk about dish towels and Lysol and dishwashing gloves and get your thongs and all. It took us back to a place of yesteryear, and I can't imagine that their wives or their daughters were proud of that. I spoke to some people in the room, some women that said it was when it happened, that there was nervous laughter, like, oh, that was really in poor taste, but it wasn't that big of a deal. And so, but they just kind of kept moving. I knew immediately because I know Kevin Sumlin. I knew his late father. I was fortunate enough to know him, Mr. Bill, and he was an amazing man that coached in the Deep South when we're talking about the height of the racial tension and the racism that he encountered with his players. Disgusting. And so I knew immediately when I heard about it that he did not know about it, that he did not see those slides, that he wasn't in the room. And indeed, that was the case. And he said that was his fault for not, reviewing the slides beforehand and the fact that, that he wasn't in the room for that. And so I think their swift action, the fining and their swift action, which really was terrible for them because it was the beginning of camp. Those are two key positional coaches at the beginning of camp. So that hurt mm-hmm. them. Right. And that hurt that player development. But I think they had to do that to make a stand. I don't agree with people that said they should have been fired. I think that's going too far. But I think this public disgrace, hopefully, the fining and not being able to be with your position players the first 2 weeks of camp, I think that, hopefully that got their attention. And I was pretty vocal about it. And then the other thing, last thing I'll say about it is, Rick and I gave everybody a chance for 3 hours to weigh in on it. We said, we're not going to attack you if you, and Rick, by the way, totally agreed with me. I didn't know, they totally agreed with me and or just agreed that it was, you know, disgusting and really deplorable. But one guy called in and he was a Texas A&M fan. And he said, well, you know, I mean, it was just a joke. And listen, I like football, but I can't listen to 2 hours of breaking down, you know, coverages and nickel and dime and a, you know, a two gap and a three gap. He said, I can't do those things. And he said, so, I mean, who can pay attention to that stuff for that long? I understood why they reverted to the jokes. And I said to him, and Rick and I both said, are you kidding me? You may not be able to digest football in that way, but a lot of us can, and a lot of us do, and a lot of us eat it up, like we sop it up with a biscuit, like maple syrup. So don't dumb me down by putting me in the same group as you that can't handle college football in that deep of a lesson and that long of a lesson. Don't dumb me down like that. So we didn't have a lot of people defend it, but he was one of them.
And I think just the sheer volume of the jokes too, right? Like just it wasn't just a slide. It seemed like it just went on forever. And if you're a paying customer.
Yeah, it was numerous slides and not that like degrading a room full of 25 people is necessarily better than 250 or 300, but it was a rather large presentation. I remember looking at the pictures. I was just surprised by how many people were there and how two guys thought that like putting up a slide with, you know, get erect, stay erect,
yeah.
don't get bent over, how anybody thought that would be, have even like a mild amount of appropriateness to it. So it was rather egregious for numerous reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think at the very base of it, like, do you think I'm that stupid that I can't digest because I'm a woman, that I don't want football in just its purest form, that I don't want you to teach me football? Like, and I'm sure that wasn't their intent, but that's the way it made me feel and a lot of women feel. Like, well, am I not bright enough or smart enough? Or right. Have aptitude to be able or palatable enough to be able to take the knowledge that you have and understand it.
And don't you think it's insulting too? Like, yeah, exactly what Ingrid was saying there. Like, hey, the people that are at the clinic, at least take them at their word that they're looking to learn the game. You know, like that you got to feel pretty ripped off if just and obviously offended, but like also disappointed that you know, look clearly if you're there. You're probably there at least to try to learn something, you know, like even man or woman being there. I guess it was all women. I didn't see the full shot of the crowd. But like if you're taking time out of your schedule to go attend an event like that, you clearly have shown an interest in actually learning the game. Yeah. You should try to teach the game.
Well, you know, my mom and I were talking about it. And I talked to and my mom loves football. And I talked to a number of other women about this. I would have gotten up and left. I wouldn't have sat through that. If I were in that room, I would have gotten up and left. I would have been. So offended. And here's the other thing. First of all, I know a lot of women that know more about football that can hold their own with any man. Holly Rowe just comes to mind. She's done my radio show 1,000 times, one of the best sideline reporters I've ever seen. You know, Nick Saban allows her into his practice, Les Miles. She's so trusted with coaches. She gets technical. She knows the game. But what I hear from a lot of common women, common fans is, and because they trust me enough to tell me this, I'd love to know more about the game, but I'm too afraid to ask, or I don't want to sound dumb, right? And so it's in that moment that you know I do everything I can to teach them, to try to help them. That's why I think these legitimate women's clinics that are doing it the right way, I think at Auburn, at Clemson, different schools that people brought up to me as examples that were doing it the right way. But there are women that genuinely want to learn. That want to know the game more, right? That want to know the nuances of the game. And as you mentioned, and yet we have this kind of stuff going on. And it just really blows my mind. Culture, too. That's the thing. That's the thing that just, like, was beyond me was mm-hmm. the fact that given the current culture that we are in, the current environment in college football, the disrespect and the violence on campus towards women domestically or sexually that you somehow thought that was okay.
So, Rachel, it sounds like you're actually not against the concept of women's clinics. I've seen some people argue that they're just the very concept of separating a clinic just for women is you know, sexist and wrong. It sounds like from what you're saying, you know, some women may feel more comfortable asking questions when they're just around all other women who they assume have similar levels of knowledge about the game. It's just the way that Texas A&M put it on is pretty grossly inappropriate.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, I don't think, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? Because there's so many good clinics that are going on. And when I see the light bulb go off in a woman's eyes, when, you know, our friend Phil Savage of the Senior Bowl, I work with him, one of the amazing greats of this game, both the NFL level and the collegiate level, he puts on a thing called the Girls of Fall. He did it in Birmingham and Mobile, Alabama. And he went in there and he had like cones and you know, they had breakout sessions. And he was teaching, you know, the women the different positions and what this coverage was and what that meant. And I could see the light bulb going off and I was giddy. I was so excited for these women that they were going to get to enjoy the game that we love so much, right? The three of us have devoted our life to this game. It's not an in-season thing. It's 365 days a year. Sometimes it's 24/7. Some people might call us a little overboard, but who cares? You know, we love it. The game is a beautiful thing of art. It's a living, breathing thing that evolves and changes. And so to see a woman get that, have that same light bulb go off and that same passion for the game and not be at a party and really not knowing to cheer or not know, you know, what a position is or what this guy does versus that guy, who's the quarterback of the defense, you know, what a three-step drop or a five-step drop is. When I see that go off for a woman, that kind of headlight or that light bulb, that brings me a lot of joy.
And not only that, I mean, for future generations of this game that a lot of people are very concerned about, women oftentimes make the decision of whether their son can play or not play, and having a greater understanding of the game, you know, what is an appropriate form tackle, what's not, you know, yes. What is a safe tackle, what's not, you know, the more education that's out there, potentially the better for the future of the game.
Yeah, and I think that's where they missed the boat. You know, that could have been an opportunity to celebrate these women, right? That could have been an opportunity to build them up, to build up their football knowledge, to leave them, you know, empowered by becoming, you know, just such a, have a deeper knowledge of the game. I think that's where they missed it. And you hit on a great point, Bud, and it's that, you know, Bob Bowlesby, the commissioner of the Big 12, said a couple of years ago famously, if we don't make changes inside the game of football, external forces are going to force us to make changes in college football. And that was in regards to player safety, targeting, head injuries, concussions. And I agree with him. Having climbed a mountain for Kevin Turner, who passed away in his early 40s because of ALS, and we believe that was brought on by multiple blows to the head. The NFL was negligent. You know, that was a day and age where fullbacks led with their head, and he had gashes, large gashes out of his Philadelphia Eagles helmet. And whatnot. So my heart is torn. You know, it's torn because I love this game so much. I joke all the time that if football were a man, I would marry it. And so, you know, I love this game so much, but I also see the other side and I see, you know, what happens to these men in their health. And you make a fabulous point that, you know, that was an opportunity to speak to the women, to the mothers that are going to make those decisions a lot of times, because these are single parent homes. And if they don't have all the knowledge of the way that the game is coming along. I mean, heck, instead of using that time to make those, you know, crude jokes, you could have talked about the way that Texas A&M is devoting their time to player safety and what Texas is doing in Pee Wee football to devote to player safety, how the game has evolved, hawk tackling that Pete Carroll, you know, developed at the Seahawks is trickling down into college football. You know, you could have talked about a lot of things, but the boat was missed.
Again, been very fortunate to be able to have Rachel Barbaro join us tonight. Rachel can be heard XM College Sports Nation, and her writings can be found at gridironnow.com. As I mentioned at the beginning, you, since 2015, have been in possession of a Heisman vote. Is there any idea as to what the landscape looks like, in your opinion, as far as we enter the 2016 season, Rachel?
Yeah, I think... I mean, you have to look at Dalvin. You have to look at what he did last year, and part of that being injured and just the, you know, the absolute beast he was even in that. I think you have to, if you don't look at Christian McCaffrey, you're crazy. I think Leonard Fournette is certainly going to come back bigger, better, faster, stronger. I just hope for LSU that and Brandon Harris that offense becomes more a little bit wide open and more two-dimensional for Cam Cameron's job and Les Miles' job. Lamar Jackson, I think, is his name. The quarterback at Louisville is getting a lot of dark horse love up there as well. And I think Chad Kelly is another one, over 4,000 yards out and another 500 with his feet there at Ole Miss. He's definitely not a fluke. You guys are going to see him. Obviously, the FSU fans in that first game. But just off the top of my head, those are some guys that catch my eye. And then obviously the Oklahoma quarterback as well.
Rachel, thank you so much for your time tonight. Would encourage anybody to Google Rachel Barbaro, Kevin Turner, learn more about that story. It's an incredible one, and you have a lot of energy, you have a lot of passion that comes through in your voice, and it's quite a testament to the things that you've been able to accomplish both in this field and really special story with Turner, and just applaud what you've done there.
Well, thank you so much. If you if you've been touched by ALS, or if you just want to donate, you can go to KevinTurnerFoundation.org. That's KevinTurnerFoundation.org. That's a 501c3 that goes to awareness and research. You know, the money that was raised by the Ice Bucket Challenge actually led to the discovery of a gene that we is a marker, and we now know and have more ideas about what causes ALS. And so that's a major step in trying to find a cure. My friend Tim Shaw, who was the youngest player diagnosed in the NFL and was a special teams player and kind of journeyman for the Tennessee Titans, he's fighting as well for his life, as are many, many others that weren't football players, that weren't notable other than being just amazing human beings and the creature that they were. So listen, anything that anybody can do, $5, $10, $15, KevinTurnerFoundation.org. We'd surely appreciate. The cool thing is I just talked to the head of the foundation, and her name's Tamara, and I asked her about, would it be okay if I provided the movie, because it did get made into a movie by Mike, and it was narrated by Mike Ditka, if I could provide that to the Florida State football team and let them watch that, because it's a little over an hour and a half, maybe a little under an hour and a half, but it is, you can't leave that movie not changed, not inspired, not amazed at his life and the things that happened around it. So we're hoping to get the movie in the hands of Florida State and then the other schools that I go to. And I mentioned we're sending bracelets down there with the hashtag I'm changing the narrative. So we're really, really excited. And I just thank you two for giving me a platform and letting me come on and talk about this amazing experience that I had down in Tallahassee. And if they, if anybody wants to follow me, they can do that at Rachel Barbeau. On Twitter, that's BARIBEAU. The I is silent, at Rachel Barbeau, rachelbarbeau.com. And I look forward to interacting with all of the many listeners you have on this awesome podcast.
Rachel, one suggestion here, obviously, because you're on Sirius, you can probably get an exclusive with Jimbo on the radio at some point. He really has committed to concussion diagnosis. We've noticed a huge uptick. Just going back to the old practice reports compared to now, and guys being held out with diagnosed concussion or concussion-like symptoms. And he brought in, Inger, was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
I think it was 3 years ago.
3 years ago, one of the leading concussion specialists in the country, I believe from the University of Pittsburgh, who is now down in Tallahassee. And, man, they hold guys out left and right. We're like, wow, another concussion. And, you know, the football fan in you is like, damn it. Like, can we stop with all this, like, guys getting held out, but the greater common sense prevails, and it's like, man, this is a real important issue if you care about this game and want to see this game around a longer time. How many guys were held out this week? Different guys with concussions.
Yeah,
three or four. I mean, just concussion like symptoms. You see them; they got the real dark shades on. And I think they're using that GPS system that they have that tracks all the players, so they can tell. You know, if this guy needs a day off because he's been running too much, I think they actually are able to measure the force of some of these hits that they take. Yep. Yep. And then go over there. Like, the player doesn't have to complain. They go to you.
That's amazing.
That's something I know he would probably talk about, because I've heard they're actually using that as a recruiting tool with parents. Hey, you know, I don't know about the other schools, but us, we have this high-tech system. We try to diagnose the concussion when it's still in the subconcussive stage. So we don't send you back out the street. You don't take that big kill shot, you know?
Well, listen, and thank you for that. And I will follow up on that, because as I told Tamara, even though we lost Kevin this spring to ALS, I'm a lifer for that foundation. I won't quit till we find a cure. That's my legacy. But they do tell you, doctors will tell you that when you get a concussion, it's like a snow globe, right? And you shake up that snow globe. And if you don't, where the real danger comes is not allowing that snow to come back down to the bottom of the snow globe. And that is by, as you mentioned, bright light, sounds, exercising your brain, effort, physicality, being physical, those different types of things. You really need as much rest as possible, as you mentioned. And, you know, if you don't do that, and God forbid you go out and you get another head injury or take another hard hit, your brain starts to create protein on it called tau. And tau has been present in many players that they've looked at after they passed away that have donated their brain, that have had CTE, that have had ALS, that have had dementia, those types of things. And so really the danger is in going back out there before that snow globe, your brain matter has had a chance to heal itself. And so I'm just so grateful to know that he's also on the forefront of concussion awareness.
Yeah, that'd be, you know, he doesn't talk about it a whole lot, just from people inside the program that we know. It's certainly something that's at the forefront of their mind. We really appreciate you joining us here tonight. This was great, and it's just as the team takes a break to focus on some bigger issues, so do we during fall camp season. I know we're breaking up our preseason preview series here to do this show, but I know Ingram and I felt it was a great opportunity. We certainly appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much, guys. I can't wait to work with you again, and maybe we'll get to visit the next time I'm in Tallahassee.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks, guys.
All right.